Hello, everyone, and welcome to NWR Connectivity episode 387. I'm your host, John Reardon. Neil is out wandering the desert, having previously conquered the trials of the mountain in a previous episode. He's descended unto the desert to seek new trials to conquer.
Neil's life is just a couple of levels in Super Mario Wonder.
Essentially, yeah. He's going to go
is
get...
Is he in exile? Like, what kind of desert wandering
I
is he
I believe he's currently
right
being tempted by the devil. Okay. I believe it's that sort of desert wandering scenario. Yeah. So we'll see.
Gotta turn some rocks into bread.
Yeah, that well, he has to not take the bread, I believe, is the
right
the key there. But we'll see. Neil does love bread, so it's going to be tough. Then. But I, you know, we'll see how it goes. We are taking bets on whether or not Neil eats the bread in the desert. But we're here.
This is some biblical story I don't really know.
Yes, it is Jesus wanders. Okay. And don't you come to Connectivity for the hot Bible jokes? That's why
kind
everybody's
of,
here,
yeah.
Right? Yeah.
Have you ever seen the animations Wooly versus God? They're pretty good.
I was really hoping you were going to talk about VeggieTales.
Is that in Sunday school?
No, it's this dude from a podcast that I listen to. It's like a typical gaming podcast, but the dude was raised in like one of the sects of Christianity that's basically a cult. So
cool.
Every now and then he just gets to tell some wild stories.
Neat. Wild story that happened to us today about 2 hours before recording. Nintendo dropped that they're going to make a Zelda movie, and we're going to talk about that. But first, we're going to talk about some of the stuff that we were previously planning to talk about before Nintendo said that. So stay tuned. We'll get there.
Should we be introduced? I'm guessing most people listening are regulars.
I refuse.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah. All right. I'm guest one, and that's guest two.
It's Matt and Alex. If you don't know who Matt and Alex are, I feel like you guys might be on more episodes than Neil. Like, it's
not in total, but like if you take a random selection of time, maybe
it feels like your odds are good. Yes. Anyway,
I'm Alex, by the way.
That's Alex. I said Matt and Alex.
Yeah, but who knows who? Like, you have to be able to recognize and match the voice with the name.
You just give off.
I'm the one that like. I'm the one that actually has my own podcast, whereas you just kind of show up here now and then.
That's well, yeah. Yeah. That's fair.
Wow.
And once on mine.
Wow.
Well, four times on yours. Let's be real. Five, technically.
You've been 4. On Smashterpieces five times.
Well, the Fire Emblem
was a four-part episode.
Oh, okay. That makes sense.
And then I was on the Wind Waker episode because okay. I was on the tail end of that one.
Okay. That makes sense. Anyway. Before we can talk about Zelda, we do have to pay our dues for having Matt on the show by talking about Fortnite.
Yeah. I promise this time there's like actually something worth talking about with it.
I believe you.
Because the new Fortnite season popped up, and this is actually it's something they've never done before, where it's a mini season that is lasting only 1 month.
Does the battle pass cost the same amount?
I don't actually know. I accidentally forgot to cancel Fortnite Crew, which I get. So like whatever Fortnite Crew has a skin that I actually like, I buy it for that month and then cancel it. And it's just like I buy skins in Fortnite. I'm just buying this one. And sometimes I get free V-Bucks on top of it. But I forgot to cancel this time. So I got the battle pass for free. So I actually don't know how much the battle pass costs this time. This season is being called Fortnite OG. Where what they've done is they have actually brought back the original map that Fortnite launched with, what was that, 5 years ago now? And this map in particular has not been seen in 3 years. So for many players who got into Fortnite right away, it's been a big nostalgia trip. And for me, who didn't get into Fortnite until they added the zero build mode, it's been a pretty big moment of validation for me saying this game sucked for 4 years.
did you play at all before they added the zero build stuff?
I played exactly twice. Once when the game first launched to try it out. So I have played on this map specifically once. And then once again during the big Marvel season, because my friend begged a few of us to play with him.
Yeah. And, yeah, because I played pretty significantly and then haven't played since they added the no build stuff. Not because of the no build stuff, that just happened to line up with roughly when I stopped playing.
Yeah.
This map would probably feel very nostalgic to me, I suppose.
Yeah, well, like I said, anytime that you wanna play, I'd be down to play. Just maybe like in December when this map's gone.
Because this is the only time I'm gonna play.
A big part, all right, because they didn't just bring back the map. They also brought back the loadouts of the time, and like effectively in every way except zero build, because obviously they keep zero build because half of their player base is on zero build permanently now. But in every way except zero build, this is the exact configuration of how Fortnite was when it first launched. All the same weapons, all the same game balance, pretty much everything. And the immediate thing that I noticed is that, wow, this is even more of a PUBG ripoff than I ever realized. Because they didn't just steal the general concept of a battle royale game. It's just PUBG.
Yep.
They're like, literally nothing sets apart launch day Fortnite from PUBG aside from the fact that it was free.
Yes, that's why it won.
It was absolutely PUBG, but free.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it had none of its own ideas. It does now, but like at the time, it was, yeah.
It's been this weird shell shock where it's like Fortnite's all, to me, has always been like a little more arcadey, like even without all of like the licensed crossover characters, it's generally been more of a spectacle. It's mm-hmm. been more about the wacky bullshit that's going on. And this is so straightforward and bare bones. It's just kind of like it doesn't even have some of the things that PUBG had at the time. Like there's not as much depth to the combat that PUBG had.
No, so, at the time it felt like Fortnite was cool because it was free, but like as a game it because right away, like PUBG already had like vehicles and stuff like that, which Fortnite, as far as I remember, when it came out, didn't have.
There were no vehicles. And in fact, they actually, one of the concessions that they made is they added a brand new vehicle for right now.
Yeah.
And like I said, it feels really validating that like I played this once and I was like, this just sucks. And that I didn't come back to it for years. Yeah. And it's like, overall, I think, like, objectively speaking, this is a cool thing to do. It's a nice little nostalgia thing. It's only for 1 month. It's a limited time thing. And obviously, many people are excited about it because they broke their all-time player count on the first day of the season. And so I'm not going to say they shouldn't have done this because it's great. It's a great idea. But I'm probably going to play a lot less Fortnite over the next month.
Yeah.
Because it's just not as good of a video game right now.
It is kind of telling that they're only doing it for 1 month, too.
Well, it's kind of an in-between thing because we're at the end of a chapter and every chapter is like the chapters are how they say, all right, we're making a brand new map now. And this time, like in between chapter 4 and chapter 5, here's this one mini season of the original map.
Which A-list celebrity is going to head this next chapter?
I don't know.
How many, like, do they do? Does, like, I know, like, the map, even in the original one, like, the map would evolve every season. How often do they just swap the map out entirely?
It used to be every 2 years. Okay. Now it's once a year.
Okay. Yeah, it almost seems like there's room to do more of these mini seasons than where you bring in classic maps. Yeah.
I feel like they could do one once a year.
Yeah, that'd be cool for like the anniversary every year.
What they're doing right now is each week of the mini season is representing a different season from the first chapter.
Oh, that is cool.
They'll change the map to what it was at the time.
Yeah. Yeah, that's cool. Because that was one of the things that, you know, I don't like PUBG didn't do that as far as I remember, like that idea that you would come back, you know, every month or whatever, and like something about the map would have changed.
PUBG just went for the strategy of like adding different maps wholesale that you would rotate through.
Yeah.
Which By the time I stopped playing PUBG, they only had two maps. So I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know how that eventually ended up going. I hope it went well for them.
Well, PUBG for a long time was in early access. I don't know if it ever came out. Like,
I think it did. I think it came out exactly when they made the second map.
Okay. Yeah, because I know it was still in early access when it got its Xbox port is what we're calling those.
Yeah,
now.
But now they're at the point where they've more or less abandoned the original PUBG in favor of the mobile version.
Yeah.
Which Fortnite's probably never going to have to worry about because the mobile version has feature parity with the quote unquote real version.
Yeah,
but it's just a thing of like I even if I was still like in the mood to play PUBG instead of Fortnite, like PUBG is not just not as good as Fortnite nowadays. It's also not as good as PUBG was.
Sure.
Because like it has changed so much for the worse and now is no longer getting active support.
Yeah.
So it's just not the same. You can't go home again.
Yeah.
Unless you want to go home to play Fortnite chapter one.
Right. Fortnite should just acquire PUBG and add the maps from PUBG to it.
Maybe. But the most important thing, obviously, is that now the scene in Avengers Endgame set in 2023 where they're playing Fortnite on the chapter one map is no longer an anachronism.
Holy shit. Is that why they did this?
Almost certainly not, but
I like to think it is.
It is a very
well, that
funny
lines up too well.
We have to make the canon work.
It is very funny to think about. I strongly doubt that it was on purpose, though.
That scene take place in like October, November-ish?
It takes place in October, and Fortnite OG started in November. So it's still technically not right. But
okay. Just off by a hair.
Yeah. But
after the snap, though, right? We're talking.
Yes.
So, okay. So the timeline just shifted slightly. That makes sense.
We didn't, like, we
obviously
didn't have a
snap
in real life. We just
the snap would obviously
pandemic.
Affect game development.
Yeah.
So that, that makes sense.
It pushed it back by 1 month.
Yeah.
Okay. So is game development. In what scenario is game development less impacted? The snap or COVID?
Well, it depends on who the snap took out.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
Like, either it's the case that, like, what probably happened is that the snap took out all the people who were like, we should have unions. And so when the snap happened, like, the grind for Fortnite development just increased a little bit. And so that content came out a little bit faster.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
An unfortunate amount of sense. But yeah, it's this Fortnite OG season is like simultaneously one of the cooler things I think they've ever done and one of the least fun things ever. Because like the map is like so much more featureless now. It's a lot more about spotting an enemy from a distance and then kind of having the tactical awareness to be in this long distance fight. You're almost never fighting an enemy point blank. And
does it feel like a slower game as a result?
Kind of.
Are you just crouching in buildings? That's what I remember from playing Fortnite.
Same.
It feels, well, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Something I was literally never able to do that in Fortnite until now. And now I'm doing it like every match. And it was something that I used to do in PUBG.
Yeah. Honestly, you're really selling me on Fortnite right now. Like I might go back.
Yeah, because that's what I thought Fortnite was this whole time, is just the game that I experienced 5 years ago, but now with more licensed characters.
No, dude, it's a different game like every couple of months. Like last season, we was all about like doing a heist where you'd go into this mansion, steal the cool weapons down at the bottom, and then jump on the grind rail to get away quickly.
That's neat. Do you still have like there's one winner at the end? Like, how does that work?
Yeah, I mean,
that's
it's
a different
battle
objective.
Royale, so, yeah.
Okay. So there's just a heist as well as the battle royale?
Well, yeah, it's a way to get high tier weapons.
Okay.
Obviously, right now, this is not the case. But yeah, Fortnite's an extremely different game from how it used to be. So like legitimately, if you tried Fortnite once 5 years ago and decided, it's not for you, when the next season starts and we're back to new stuff again, give it a try. You might like it.
Give it a try, just not now.
Right. I hope there are people who like tried it when it came out and they're like, this isn't for me. And they're like, you know, it's been 5 years. Maybe I'll try it again. They hop back and it's like, this hasn't changed at all.
I did see someone posting on the Fortnite subreddit where they're like, imagine showing someone this picture in 2018. And it's just the picture of the map right now.
Well, all right.
But yeah, that's your Fortnite update.
Thank you, Matt.
I'm here on the scene.
As always, and that
correspondent from Tilted Towers. That's
my report from the scene.
I've been playing Star Ocean Second Story R because I have a weird relationship with Star Ocean where I always see the trailers for these games and I see the gameplay of these games and I'm like, that looks great. Like they're action JRPGs. They have like very Star Trek inspired plots of like, oh no, you're a person from a distant planet with advanced technology who now is on this like medieval planet and needs now to try and blend in. Planet. Yeah, and you have to like figure out the society there. I'm like, that's a great, cool, good concept. And so I buy them often. I own several Star Ocean games. I have never finished any of them. because the other thing that I always remember about Star Ocean once I start them is that they're so slow. Like the, I have never played another JRPG that opens as slowly as Star Oceans always do. Every single one of them.
Oh, you should play Persona.
I won't.
You'll get to the 10-hour mark and someone will say, congrats on finishing the tutorial.
Right. Yeah, no, I feel like I've just hit the point in Star Ocean 2 where like things are moving. Like I'm starting to get invested in the plot.
But I know a couple people who have been talking this game up extremely though.
Yeah, it's, I will say like, it's so it's interesting because like the first there has been Star Ocean R was already on Switch, which was a port of a PSP remake of the Super Famicom Star Ocean game, which had never come out in America. And that was cool because it essentially took the Super Nintendo game and visually upgraded it to the level of like a PS1 game, like a PS1 RPG where you have like the nice pre-rendered backgrounds, like the combat scenes were in 3D, but like very PS1 style 3D. It was PSP though, so it like didn't look all garbled and gross like PS1 games tend to. It was a very nice remaster, but like didn't really show off the Switch. This one was originally a PS1 game, and so they've updated it to kind of to me it looks like if Octopath Traveler wasn't so obsessed with being a 3D Super Nintendo game, like you still have like 2D sprites in a 3D world, but it looks like a natural evolution of what that style of game was back on like PS1, like games like Xenogears and stuff like that, where you or Final Fantasy Tactics or something, where you would have a 2D sprite in a 3D world, where the 3D world isn't trying to look retro. It's trying to look completely modern. They're just using sprites for the main characters. And that's kind of what this is doing. Like the environments and everything look really nice. Like they are really pretty graphics, even on the Switch version. You just happen to have your characters or sprites. And it looks really good. I think it looks better than any of like the HD 2D stuff that I've seen. And my strategy for this one, since I know that I never finish these, is that from the moment the game started, I just set it to the easiest possible difficulty. And I quickly found a ability that lets me lower enemy encounters. Oh, also, this game doesn't have random encounters. You can see every enemy on the map.
That's so, always like, good.
If you just don't want to, you just don't fight them. And when you're on easy mode, you don't really have to grind. And so I've essentially just been playing this as a visual novel with the occasional boss fight. And it's like way better that way. Like I'm having way more fun playing it that way than I ever have with the other ones. Because I always like these games. I like the concept of them. But they're definitely from an era of RPGs where I felt like we were really obsessed with like there has to be a lot of content here. You have to, you know, fill out both of your discs on the PS1 game. And it's just, I just don't care. Like, I just want this thing to move along. The voice acting is rough, but you can skip through most of it. The music is nicely redone. It's a really good, solid remake. And I'm having a good time.
Is the plot good, considering that's what you're kind of focused on?
It's getting, like, it starts really strong. It gets real slow. And now I've sort of just started to have stuff happen. Like, I feel like we're at a point now where, like, I can see, like, you know, that point at the beginning of the story where, like, you haven't really found out what the other side of the story arc is yet. Like, mm-hmm. I feel like I'm just to the point where I'm like, okay, I can see the arc. I'm still at the beginning of the arc, but I see the direction the arc is going. I see what, like, my long-term goal is. Things are starting to happen. I feel like I've kind of just got there.
Things have gotten going.
Yes. I did have a point very early in the game where I met a third party member that, like, my character liked, but my other party member didn't like. And I hit a point where it was like, do you want this person to keep traveling with you? And I was like, oh, that's kind of a weird, like, it's not just like set in stone. And I was like, well, my other person doesn't like them. So, like, what if I just say no? And they're like, okay. And that party member just never joined me, which I think may have, like, screwed me out of some things. But, like, I like that I was able to do that. And now I'm just wondering when I'm going to get another party member, because currently it's just my two starting characters. But that's fine.
That sounds like how I played Baldur's Gate 3 for my first attempt.
On easy mode, or just saying no to every party member?
Accidentally not recruiting a party member.
Oh,
and then
yeah.
Just being like literally I finished the goblin camp before someone made me aware of the fact that I was supposed to have more than two party members by then.
Yeah, that'd be difficult with two party members.
It was.
Yeah.
I did it, though.
I mean, good job. But I'm sorry that happened to you. What what is funny when you're playing on, like, super duper easy mode is I just went through this part where it was like a tournament, and most of the fights in the tournament, I would kill the guy in like three hits. Because I'm also, I think, slightly over leveled. And then I got to, like, the last fight, which you're supposed to lose. And so it went from, like, everybody dies in a hit to this one guy that's just, like, impossible to kill. And I was like, what happened? Like, it wasn't as nicely hidden as it would be if you were playing on a regular difficulty. It was just this suddenly this was an end game boss. So that was fun. But yeah, I'm enjoying it. I don't know if I'll finish it. We'll see. Maybe I can finish this one, and that will give me the push I need to go actually play through Star Ocean Divine Force, which I feel like I picked up like 2 years ago and have barely played.
How many Star Oceans are there?
Like at least seven.
Okay.
Hang on. I'm gonna pull up a list. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. That's a remake. Oh, but some of these, oh, there's like some of these overlap. Let's say 10.
So there's like a more than running JRPG franchise.
Yeah, the first one was on Super Nintendo. The most recent one that isn't a remake is Divine Force, which came out in 2022 on Xbox and PlayStation.
Okay, so this is like an active franchise still.
Yeah, you can tell like Divine Force is really cool. You can tell it had a budget of $10. But it's like really trying to punch above its weight. The characters look terrifyingly creepy and weird. but like it's really given it its best shot. But yeah, you know what other game is Japanese?
There's a couple of
them. So many.
No, there's just one specifically. Shadow of the Colossus. Alex.
Oh, I played that.
Yeah, isn't that weird that that came up and that's the only other Japanese game?
That's bizarre. We were just talking about how we wanted to talk about that on the podcast. It's weird how that lined up.
That's crazy. Hey, you finished it.
Yeah, that's a very good video game. I liked it quite a lot.
You played the PS4 version, right?
I did. Okay. Play the remake.
Okay.
This is a game that I've been, it's kind of like, it's been unfinished business for me. I first started it on the PlayStation Now streaming service.
Gross.
Back on the PlayStation 4, which was a bad idea, but I did try, and I got as far as Lakebird. I think that's the fourth one, the fourth
that's
Colossus.
That's pretty far,
yeah,
given
no,
the way
I,
you
that
were
sounds
playing
very,
it.
Yeah, it sounds very far to be doing the... to be on the streaming thing.
Yeah, well, no, it was only a week. And after that week free trial, I just couldn't bother. I didn't care. The streaming service wasn't good enough, but I did play enough to know that I liked this game.
Sony tells me it's very good, though.
Well, they're lying. They're lying to you specifically.
As they often do.
And then I borrowed the remake from a friend, but unfortunately, this friend had the smarts to ask for it back. And of course, being the good person that I am, I did return it. And so it's been a minute, but I've been able to beat Shadow of the Colossus. I beat it essentially within a week, though half of it I did on a Discord call with Matt and some other friends. And I played it up until like 3 a.m. Mm-hmm. And that ruined my following Sunday, or that following day, which was a Sunday. But it was worth it. That ending, I'm still thinking about it. Like, it's a very complicated ending. One of the reasons why I had so much drive to beat this game is that
He warned me about spoilers. I don't think he warned the listeners about spoilers.
Oh, sure. Spoilers for Shadow of the Colossus.
Yes. Upcoming. Spoilers for the game from 2000. What was it?
2018. Yeah.
When was the original game?
05, I think.
That sounds about right.
I remember this because we had a conversation because I thought that like Twilight Princess was just copying Shadow of the Colossus. Yes.
Yeah, we have had that conversation before.
It's not.
It's Twilight Princess is copying Ico.
Okay.
Yeah.
That must be
that. There's literally like EJ Noma has like stated directly that they looked at the art for Ico as an inspiration.
There's so much of Shadow of the Colossus. Like this just feels like I'm playing a alternate timeline version of Twilight Princess.
Especially like they changed the art a bit for the PS4 version, but the PS2 version especially looks very similar.
Yeah, I believe it. But the main drive I had to beat this game is that I was listening to Easy Allies podcast for years and years, and Isla Hink on there mentioned that she got to the end and that she felt gutted, or I think the word she used was not shame, but guilty by the end.
Ooh,
of
yeah.
Shadow of the Colossus. And I thought that was really interesting because when I got to the end, I feel like the feelings I have are more complicated. Like, I'm not sure what to make. I'm not even sure like if it's a sad ending.
It's yeah,
there's
it's
a lot of melancholy.
There is. It's simultaneously like very sad yet a little hopeful. But yeah, I definitely got this vibe of like, oh, what did I do? Like,
yes, that is true. There was the gut punch of, oh,
yep.
This is probably wrong,
but
killing all the colossi.
But oh, that. So I mean, I played this pretty close to when it came out on PS2. So like I had like no spoilers or anything for the end of the game. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I still like viscerally remember like, you know, Wander getting back to the temple and all the soldiers are there and him just like trying to get to the girl and they're just like shooting him in the legs. And I'm just like, holy crap. Like it was, oh man. Yeah, that
was vicious.
Few video games have stuck in my brain the way this game did.
Oh, and one of the coolest like gameplay moments is at the very end when you're being sucked into the pool.
Yeah.
And like the only thing you can do is hold on to the trigger, which you've been doing with the Colossus the entire game. Mm-hmm. And you're just holding on to the last little like steps.
Yeah.
And it's futile, but you try anyways. It's so good.
Yeah.
But like there's so much to dig into there. Like, I'm not sure if Lord Emon was in the right.
No. Yeah, there. Yeah, like. Oh, man. Yeah, there's because for a game that does not go out of its way to tell you a story in a traditional way,
No,
there's like so much lore that you just implicitly understand.
Yeah.
And I don't think that any other game outside of other like of like Ico and Last Guardian, like only these games do it this way. And none of them do it as well as Shadow of the Colossus does.
Yeah, I'm trying to like wrap my mind around like, was Lord Eamon in the right? Or maybe even Dorman isn't as bad as we are led to believe.
Right. Yeah.
Because I think Dorman makes a comment at the very beginning that Wander, like the thing that he's about to do, like he gets a warning.
Yep. Yeah.
So it wasn't like he was tricked. I think Wander is just like that driven and doesn't care about the consequences.
Well, and I get I always got the impression that Wander knew, like once you see the ending, because you don't know everything that Wander knows, obviously. Like,
right.
He goes there, I feel like, knowing exactly what he's doing. He goes there to sell his soul to the devil, essentially. And yeah.
At the very least, he knows that whatever he's going to do, like, it would be the end of him.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And it's like, is that the baby him? Is the baby Wander now?
I think so.
Okay.
It gets a little weird in Japanese there at the end.
Yeah. I like how weird it gets.
Yeah.
Because my first concern was, oh no, she's trapped there alone with absolutely nobody.
Mm-hmm.
And that feels horribly, horribly tragic. But then you have the child there, and like having an infant at the very end of it does feel like a sign of hope.
Yeah, she has the child. She finds the garden. So I was 13 when this game came out. And so like a huge part of that period in my life was spent trying to climb to the top of the temple to get to that garden before the end of the game.
I know you can do that, but you
can.
Much stamina.
You essentially have to, you have to max out your stamina, and you have to play, at least on PS2, you had to max out your stamina, and then you had to do New Game Plus enough times that it would let you keep expanding your stamina beyond that. You can get up there. And it's nuts because it's totally just like essentially like you can see like T-posed character models for the ending cutscene are just hanging out up there. I honestly don't know if they like changed that for the remaster or not, since they knew people would be able to get up there. I assume they probably did.
I know you can get up there
just for nostalgia's sake.
Yeah, I'm not sure if the T-pose models are.
That kind of leans into something that I always thought was kind of the incredible mystique of that game, especially like playing it like before really the internet was as big a thing, was you had this giant map that felt like it had so many like hidden caves and places and crevices and like weird ruins with symbols on them and like things that looked like doors.
So Tears of the Kingdom ripped this one off.
Breath of the Wild and Tears of the Kingdom are both very directly just Shadow of the Colossus. Like, absolutely.
But with content.
Yeah, but even the Divine Beasts are Shadow of the Colossus, but worse. Like, that concept of, like, there's this giant creature that you need to go subdue. Like,
I guess.
And obviously, it plays differently, obviously, because they as a Zelda dungeon. But that idea of, there's this giant thing in the world that I need to go hunt down, I think is very Shadow of the Colossus. But something that was crazy about this game at the time was that it really felt like there might be more in that world that you hadn't found. Like there was an eerie creepiness to that world that it felt like if you did explore some weird place, you might find something very strange. And there were all these weird like hints and clues to things that got cut from the game, that then when they remastered it, they like sort of, I won't spoil anything, but like they put some things back in to allow some of those clues to actually lead you somewhere. It was a some of that you kind of had to be there, but it's just such a weird game to experience in isolation without knowing anything else about it.
That world is aggressively empty, just like oppressingly empty.
Yes.
So when you like see the deer show up at the very end, I'm not sure what it means, but it felt so comforting to see a mammal that wasn't something that I brought.
Right. To see life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because all the life you see is like birds and
birds, lizards, and one turtle. I always got super excited whenever I ran into the turtle. Have you played like Ico or Last Guardian?
I have not. This is my first one of those games. I'm definitely interested. I think this game left enough of an impression on me. And how long are those games?
Not super. Last Guardian is not super long. And it's been a while since I played through Ico, but I feel like it's pretty short.
Yeah, I think pound for pound, Shadow of the Colossus does so much with so little.
Yeah.
That if another game is like that, that is like, even if it's something that it might take me a second to acclimate to, it might be worth it if the experience is going to be short and sweet.
Yeah. How long to beat says the main story of Ico is 6.5 hours long.
Oh, perfect. Yeah. And that's a weekend.
Last Guardian, how long are you? 12 hours long. Oh, Shadow of the Colossus is apparently only, well, the PS2 version says it's 9.5 hours long. The PS4 version says 7 hours long. It's all loading screens.
It was about 10-ish for me.
That sounds, yeah.
I think like an hour was spent on the 10th Colossus. Whichever one was the one with the geysers.
Oh, sure. The one, yeah, they have to flip over.
Yeah, that one sucked. That's the one Colossus I didn't care for. All the other ones were fantastic.
I always remember there being a few where, like, it took me a while to find them. I remember as a kid, the one that's kind of like at the bottom of like this like Colosseum type well structure.
Yeah.
Electric lizard thing. I remember that took me forever because it's kind of like you have to like find a cave that like leads you into a mountain to get to it. That took me so long to find.
Are you talking about the one that like swims in the sand?
No. There's one that it like climbs up on the walls.
Oh yeah, like the gecko. Yeah, that one's cool. That's a very good fight.
It's a very cool fight. Yeah.
But that one didn't take me forever. The one that swam in the sands did, and like I think the boar. But I think my favorite colossi are probably platform giant, of course.
Correct.
The third one.
Correct answer.
That one's iconic. I really like getting on the lake bird. I'm not sure if the rest of lake bird is all that impressive, but that moment where you brace yourself, jump up and then grab is so good.
Yeah.
I think the flying serpent is really good.
That one's some of them that are just great spectacle. Like,
yeah,
yeah. They're not difficult. That's the thing. Most of them honestly aren't that difficult.
No, they're puzzles really. Like the combat isn't a major component.
You're rarely in danger of dying with most of them.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
It's more just figuring out what to do.
The next, like the penultimate one, and then the final boss were both also just incredible. But I think penultimate one just lasted a little too long.
Yeah, the impact of that final boss, like the music being all sad and the stormy weather, and it just like looming and it's huge. Was just incredible.
And that one felt so dangerous because if you got hit, like you're nearly dead.
Oh yeah, that one could kill you. Yeah, there mm-hmm. that one was like just running behind cover just to get to him was a challenge.
Yeah. Very good game. I think the thing that I took away the most from it was just how well it uses the negative space of the world.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like stripping down the game to just the boss fights and then the exploration and the horseback riding, like you're left to think about what you're doing and the world around you and the implications of why the world is so dead.
Yeah.
And that puts your mind in a very different space than if you were to just like select the bosses from a screen.
Yeah, it's a very different kind of open world game, and yet it uses its open world very effectively.
Yeah.
In a way that most do. I mean, it's the most comparable thing I can think of is Breath of the Wild, even though it uses its world in a very different way. Like it understands the importance of that empty space. I don't need to give you a bunch of side quests in here. I can let you experience a journey, and that's okay.
And it's still different for the simple fact that there is nothing in it. Like, there's no mobs or anything. No, there's nothing to fight.
You can stab a lizard. Across.
Yeah. Which I did a lot. I stabbed quite a few lizards.
Yeah.
I noticed that there are times where, like, I would hit the lizard and it would just hit the tail. And so the lizard would run off, but I could get the tail.
Yeah.
Which felt like the right thing to do.
I will say Zelda ripped off the horse AI from Shadow of the Colossus. That was a big deal. When Shadow of the Colossus had a horse that, like, was smart, and, like, if you put it on a curvy bridge, it would be like, hey, I'm going to follow the curve of the bridge. That was a leap forward in game design none of us were ready for.
It was a much better horse because it was actually useful. Very useful.
Yeah.
Epona, like, you're hopping off of, well, I guess not Epona. I had the amiibo, so in Breath of the Wild, I used Epona. But you're hopping off of your horse like every 2 minutes to go do something. But Shadow of the Colossus, you really get attached to that horse.
Yeah. Yeah, you only hop off of it once. And anyway.
Moving on.
My waveform's just been a straight line for a little while.
Matt, as an avid Shadow of the Colossus fan, what do you think of this game?
I mean it's pretty clear how influential it was from, you know, just how Twilight Princess is the same video game in so many ways. And I think that I think it was an odd choice to give the character of Shadow the Colossus an assault rifle.
Yeah.
But like, as weird as it is, like up front, once you really get going and understand the depths of Shadow the Colossus's character, you start to really understand how they couldn't have told that story without giving him an assault rifle.
Right. It makes sense in context.
I really respect the artistry that goes into making something like that. So
I'm not sure if they really, it was bold of them to do that to Maria. I mean, she's such a little girl. Like,
in fairness, that was set up in Eco.
True. Yeah. If you didn't play that, then I could see where that would be kind of a shock. But yeah. I hope there's some listeners who have not played any of these games.
I did watch Eco X, though, which adapted some of that.
Right. As long as you read the manga, you're good. But speaking of things that vaguely relate to Zelda sometimes. I hope that sentence doesn't wind up being too true.
The Sonic franchise does vaguely relate to Zelda at least once.
Yeah, that's Lost true. World?
Yeah.
In the best Sonic game, Nintendo, randomly tonight, put out a quick little PR thing, which honestly, I'm just going to read the whole thing because it's very short. That's just titled Development of a Live Action Film of The Legend of Zelda to Start. Nintendo Company Limited today announced that it will develop a live action film of The Legend of Zelda. The film will be produced by Shigeru Miyamoto, representative, director, and fellow of Nintendo, and Avi Arad, chairman of Arad Productions Inc., who has produced many mega hit films. The film will be produced by Nintendo and Arad Productions and directed by Wes Ball. The film will be co-financed by Nintendo and Sony Pictures Entertainment, with more than 50% financed by Nintendo. The theatrical distribution of the film will be done worldwide by Sony Pictures Entertainment. By producing visual contents of Nintendo IP itself, Nintendo is creating new opportunities to have people from around the world access the world and entertainment which Nintendo has built through different means apart from its dedicated game consoles. By getting deeply involved in the movie production with the aim to put smiles on everyone's faces through entertainment, Nintendo will continue its efforts to produce unique entertainment and deliver it to as many people as possible. They use the word entertainment too much in that.
Yeah.
So they're making a live action Zelda movie.
So like, I know that you, like, with the way that the filmmaking business works, it would be literally impossible for them to, like, keep this secret until there's a trailer for them to drop as a surprise or anything.
Right.
But like, you could at least, like, give it a little more fanfare instead of just dropping it on a random Tuesday.
It is. Well, and I will say, like, in a follow up tweet. Where'd it go? Yeah. Miyamoto himself. He says, this is Miyamoto tweeting from the Nintendo account. I have been working on the live action film of The Legend of Zelda for many years now with Avi Arad, who has produced many mega hit films. That's required that they say that every time they say his name.
It's part of his title.
I have asked Avi-san to produce this film with me, and we have now officially started the development of the film, with Nintendo itself heavily involved in production. It will take time until its completion, but I hope you look forward to seeing it. Yeah, so it sounds like they've been in, like, talks for a long time.
Yeah, well, yeah, if in filmmaking, we've been working on this for many years, is code for we finally have a script after talking about it.
We have been greenlit, is what this sounds like.
Yeah, it's like... Yeah. It's like how Edgar Wright was working on Ant-Man for a decade.
Right. Right. So we probably won't see this for a while.
Yeah, no. Well, so a while in filmmaking terms is very different from a while in video game terms, because like filmmaking, that is a well-oiled machine. You can announce a film. Right. Like you can announce a release date for a film right now that you have not put pen to paper on in 3 years and you'll probably hit that date.
Yeah.
Right. So, barring any, you know, writer's strikes.
Yeah. Imagine like if that happened.
Yeah. As long as we're clear of that, we should be good.
Yeah. So I don't, it's not going to be that long before we get
not
it,
video game long. No.
Yeah. But
this isn't Metroid Prime 4. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, but like they definitely have done zero production work on it. So
yes,
I'd be surprised if there even was a script at this stage.
You know, there may be a treatment. I do
a
know
treatment
that, like,
almost certainly.
Yes, they highlight a director, Wes Ball, who did the Maze Runner films, which I know when I watched Maze Runner, first thing I thought was this guy should make a Zelda movie. But they don't highlight a writer.
Yeah, which I don't know, maybe
just a producer and a director. So
I mean, God knows like how directly involved Nintendo gets themselves into the process. Like it's maybe it's just going to be written by committee. Mario sure felt like it was.
Yeah, well, and I mean, in Mario's case, it worked for them. Like, I feel like obviously a live action film is a very different thing from an animated film, but it feels like I'm assuming Nintendo feels like, OK, we know how this worked last time. We know what to do to make this work. And I assume they will approach this in a very similar way. Granted, the fact that it's live action does make me assume that like and like, you know, the very limited view we have of like producer and director makes me assume that this probably isn't going to be as goofy as the Mario movie was. Which I think is good for Zelda. You could do Zelda goofy. If you want to do Wind Waker Zelda, go for it. But I would like to see them do a more serious take. I think that would be interesting.
That's the problem. If you're going to make a more interesting take on Zelda, then it needs to be a lot better than Mario was.
Yes. Yeah, you can get away with a lot when you're making a movie for 6-year-olds.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Agreed.
And this is absolutely not going to be that.
No. I suppose we should
say they still have time. They can cancel it. I'm honestly, personally, I do not like this news. I don't think Zelda is going to work well in live action.
I think so. Okay, I guess let me. Okay. Do I think it will be good? No.
Yeah.
Do I think that conceptually a live action film based on the Legend of Zelda IP could be good? Yes.
I 100% agree with that.
Now,
I think ideally it should be 2D animation. If you can't do that, then maybe stop motion. If you have to, I guess 3D. But live action is the last place I would go to get a Zelda thing going.
I think ideally we would all like a Studio Ghibli Zelda movie.
Well, that's the thing, though. It's like. We've kind of talked about this before. It's like animation for adults is not taken very seriously.
Yeah, I wonder if there is an element of, I mean, because Zelda obviously is in the midst of, Zelda is more popular right now than it ever has been.
Yeah.
And I'm sure they have metrics on what the age range is for that popularity.
Yeah, if you want an audience of grownups to care about it, Yeah, like, it sucks to say this. I hate that this is the case. You can't make it animated. You
are unfortunately correct. Yeah.
Yeah. And, like, I think the only thing that's really broken out of that is Spider-Verse, and that's not a very realistic standard to set brand new to movies Nintendo at. So
I would love to see Zelda in the Spider-Verse animation style, though.
Yeah, that would look really cool. I would love to see the creative minds that made Spider-Verse to make a Zelda movie. And, like, obviously, you don't make it look exactly like Spider-Verse, because it's the, like, Spider-Verse is so entrenched in comic books.
Right.
If, like, take that idea to it, where you're not just making an animated movie, you're making something genuinely incredible like that. Where
now, an interesting question that I think we have to look at with this is, do they set this as its own setting, its own version of Zelda, or do they look and say, okay, well, Breath of the Wild, that universe is the thing that's very popular, and Breath of the Wild sort of exists as its own isolated timeline already. Do they try and adapt that version of Zelda?
I think the winning strategy is to not base this off any specific game.
Yeah.
They can take elements from various games, but I really don't think this works out trying to be a direct adaptation of a specific Zelda game.
Oh, I don't know if you would directly adapt it, but I guess you have a potential to. Yeah, and you probably couldn't do this with Breath of the Wild. I was just thinking you might have the potential to set it. Like, given that Breath of the Wild is far and away the most popular setting for Zelda, like, just talking about that iteration.
I think you do Ocarina of Time. Like, that's the story that most people know. I think that's the one that has the most iconic appeal.
I don't know if that's true anymore. Like, I feel like we're probably at a point now where the most commonly held Zelda experience is probably Breath of the Wild.
I wonder if you were to ask just Joe Schmo off the street if Link wears blue or green, what they would say.
Yeah.
But also, like honestly, consider the general audience that we need to worry about.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they're not going to really even notice the difference between this is Breath of the Wild or Ocarina of Time, I would say.
Right. And that's actually your comment about the tunics is a great thing, though, is I guess that's kind of more my thing, is it's like Breath of the Wild is very much its own interpretation of Zelda that feels a bit different from the rest of the franchise. Like, you may not see a Zelda movie where it's like, this is the plot of Breath of the Wild, but you could potentially see a Zelda movie where the Sheikah play a very similar role to what they play in Breath of the Wild, right?
Mm-hmm.
You could see a Zelda movie where the Yiga clan shows up, like where the Zora are represented very much in the way they are in Breath of the Wild, as opposed to the way those characters are in, say, Ocarina of Time.
I guess the plot pulls from Ocarina, and maybe a lot of the stuff on the side and the setting pulls from Breath of the Wild.
So Tears of the Kingdom, then.
I mean, I personally think it's more likely that they don't specifically do any of that. They just pull from the whole franchise, because frankly that's what Mario did. Like, the Mario movie did not pull from any one specific Mario game.
But I refer to Ocarina as like the tried and true, just like the set Zelda plot formula, where it's Ganondorf, Link, and Zelda.
Yeah,
Ganondorf takes
that's,
over.
That's why I say Tears of the Kingdom is because that is very much Ocarina of Time.
I also don't think that's like Ganondorf, Zelda, and Link as like the core characters is not a specifically Ocarina of Time thing, I would say. I'd say that describes pretty much any game that Ganondorf is in. So
yeah, that's true. I'm just using Ocarina as shorthand.
I would say the more iconic part of Ocarina of Time is the time travel.
Yeah, like, I doubt that they're going to do time travel. I mean, what kind of Link are they going to do? Are they going to do a young Link, or my guess is older, right?
Like, I feel like you do a teenage Link. I feel like your audience, yeah, I think you target a teenage Link. Honestly, they're going to do Twilight Princess. Like, Twilight Princess is mass appeal Zelda. Not literally do Twilight Princess, but like, as far as like kind of tone. I feel like Twilight Princess is sort of probably where we're going to land.
Wes Ball should play Shadow of the Colossus then.
True.
I almost dare to say that like maybe Twilight Princess is more interesting than what we're actually going to get.
Almost certainly. If there's no next snap.
Honestly, if you Twilight Princess without the gameplay is probably an okay movie.
Probably, yeah.
Like Twilight Princess, like story presentation is probably its strongest element.
Yeah, I can agree with that.
Yeah, just remove Ilya. That's all.
You gotta have Ilya. No. Who's gonna yell at Link about not taking care of Epona?
Anybody else?
Overall, I'm gonna say my confidence in this is low. Not just because of like what it would take to make a Zelda movie, but also I don't think Avi Arad is the one to bet on.
It's a weird. I guess we should for context. Yeah,
no, Avi Arad is make Spider-Verse though. let's understand what we're saying.
He produced Spider-Verse.
Yeah, so I guess context for people who don't know who we're talking about. He's been in charge of like Sony's superhero movies. Is that a fair? So like great movies such as Morbius.
Yeah, Zelda's going to be the second movie to make $1 billion.
Yeah, though he was also the executive producer of Pac-Man and the Ghostly Adventures. Oh, so boy. He has so, video like, game experience. Oh, and Uncharted.
The thing that is important to know about Avi Arad is that he is not a creative. He's a producer. No,
he's
on
the
business side of things.
Yep.
And you cannot judge a producer by their best win. You have to judge them by the sum total of their output. And Avi Arad's sum total of his output is not very good.
I will say, looking at the basic review scores on IMDb and doing some very quick averaging in my head, I think it's a 7. I think the sum average is like a 6.8 to a 7.
It's also a matter of you kind of need to consider more recently, more heavily, because I think that actually gets better.
There is a Morbius in there, but like the more recent stuff and you've got Venoms. You've got Spider-Man, the two Spider-Verse films, you've got Spider-Man, essentially you've got Spider-Man seems to be the offset.
The movies where Kevin Feige walked in the door and said I've got this,
right? But that's the point, is like it, like you said, he's not the creative. Right.
He's not even like the producer of the recent Spider-Man movies, really. Like those are all MCU efforts. Like literally Marvel Studios took like the deal with those is Sony pays for them. Marvel makes them.
That's what a producer is the paying guy. We could also make the argument that that's roughly what this is, that Nintendo, I think, has a heavier I suspect that Nintendo will have a heavier hand in this than Sony had in Uncharted.
Yeah, Miyamoto's gonna be looking over the scripts every single draft.
Like I think Nintendo is obsessive.
I don't know for sure that that's a good thing.
I don't know if it's a good thing. I'm just saying, as far as like how much of this
it's almost certainly
will actually be
thing.
Attributed back to him as a producer, like I feel like Nintendo will be very deeply involved with this at an almost Marvel like level, but without the experience of Marvel.
Well, so that's the thing, because Avi Arad his history is so involved with Marvel. Like I've actually been reading the MCU history book that mm-hmm. just released, and just as a quick note, if you care about the MCU to any extent, I highly recommend that book.
What is that book actually called?
MCU the Reign of Marvel Studios.
Okay.
And a lot of people have been like talking about the book as being like kind of like a burn book or a hit piece on Marvel Studios because it reveals some juicy drama, but it's really not that. It is really a straight up genuine history book of the MCU that mm-hmm. is unauthorized, so they can tell all the true stories unfiltered. And I think it's a great book. I've been enjoying it a lot, but I just read the Spider-Man chapter today, and the like they're talking about Amazing Spider-Man, the Andrew Garfield movies. They're like, and a quote from the book is regarding Marvel Studios' reaction to the Amazing Spider-Man movies, which they previously worked with Avi Arad because he was there at the beginning of the MCU. And the quote that they pull out is, "Looks like Avi's finally lost it. Honestly, maybe he never had it to begin with." And I read that quote, and then I look up and I see this news.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, I don't have faith here. I can't. I'm not going to say it's impossible because he managed to accidentally produce Spider-Verse, but the name Avi Arad does not inspire immediate confidence in the way that, like, when we talk about Illumination, like, Illumination's fine. They're very basic. I don't expect a lot from them, but I also expect consistent wins from them, at least. I don't get that from Avi Arad.
At my gut, so that's something I've been trying to think back on is, okay, like, obviously I know now that I think that Mario movie is pretty good. Not perfect, but like, I added, it's really fun. I like it. And I look back and I say, okay, when that was announced, I was 100% convinced it would be a dumpster fire. When they announced Illumination, I went, not Illumination. Like, I think Mario is honestly probably the best thing they've ever made. Having seen most of their films.
You're not wrong. I don't like Illumination. Just think they have a consistent output.
They know how to pander to their audience very well. And so I don't know that I look at this, like, I look at this and I go, oh, this might not be good. But I can't honestly say that I look at it and feel any worse about it than I did when they announced Mario.
At least Mario is going to be animated, though. But like, it was going to be in the right,
yes,
like, form factor, the right media for it.
See, I don't. So with Mario, yes, Mario has to be animated, period. It also helps that we have a very clear example of how Mario should not be live action. but like, Mario, yes, should be animated 100%. There is no question. When I look at Zelda, could it be animated? Absolutely.
It'd be great if it was, but
yeah. But I also think, can it be live action? Yeah. Yeah, I can see
honestly,
that.
Honestly, I'm with you there.
Like, I'm not, that doesn't mean I think it's going to be good. That doesn't mean I'm super optimistic that it's going to be live action. I might even prefer it animated, but I don't think it's like an obvious, oh, that's a mistake. Like I would if they were to have said that Mario was going to be live action.
Like, I don't see any immediately obvious reason that Zelda can't be live action. Because, I'll just be blunt. Lord of the Rings is right there.
Yep, and that's 100%. But
Lord of the Rings does not have a tingle.
But that's the target.
Lord of the Rings does have Tom Bombadil, though.
Well, yeah, they completely avoided adapting him into live action because they knew that they couldn't.
What do you think the Zelda movie's going to do?
They're just not
going
to do tingle? Are they just going to not adapt Zelda then? Might as well just throw it in the trash.
There are more Zelda games without Tingle than games where there are.
And those games are wrong.
To once again circle around the Twilight Princess, there is a hot, more live action appropriate version of Tingle.
Perlo.
That's the version we're getting.
Yeah. I'd settle for Perlo.
Yeah. Oh, settle is an understatement.
I do think that the art direction, like, even it's just coming down to like the character proportions. Like, how do you do a character like Hudson, any of the Carpenters, in live action in a way that doesn't feel like they're just fantasy peasants?
And I think that's where, like, you know, I think in a movie, could there be a character that might be Hudson in the background? Sure. But like, I think you probably essentially, like, you have Link, you have Zelda, you have Ganon or Ganondorf. Hopefully Ganondorf. I think he's a cooler character. Maybe you have Impa. Like, but all those other characters, I think you essentially make characters for the movie.
I mean, I feel like maybe they could just do the MCU strategy of take these things and reinterpret them in a way that is better in live action. Like,
I don't know, when Halo did that, everybody got really upset.
That John, I don't want to fight with you about Halo, but we're some one of these days we're gonna have a little more of a good faith argument about Halo.
I would love to do a Halo TV show when the second season comes out, if it ever comes out. We should do a Halo TV show episode.
I do not want to take away your enjoyment of that show from you. I genuinely think that it's great if you liked it, but from I just can't agree that what you said there is accurate.
All I said was that they reinterpreted some things. That's true.
But I think that the MCU is a blueprint for success there, not mm-hmm. in the way that it needs to be the real world, but in the way that you don't aim to make it just the things we see in the games on the movie screen. Because, and honestly, that's what adaptation should be, in my opinion. Like, it should be change what needs to be changed for it to look good in this new form. And like when you ask these questions of like, how do you make this character look good on screen without changing him? You don't. You change him. You keep the essence. You keep the reasons why you like them, and make a new character that you like for the same reasons. Or you make a new version of the character that you like for the same reasons.
Yeah. Thinking about it, I actually think that the recent Dungeons and Dragons movie is a really good point of reference, where you have this setting that is more a collection of lore and locations and races and things and tropes than you do a specific story. And then you sort of craft a new thing within that. Because that I think is something Zelda has very strong, like you, the one thing I do need you to do in a Zelda movie is like, there is this expansive mythos within this franchise. Obviously, it's not that you have to do all of it. You certainly don't have to fit it into the timeline.
Absolutely not. I mean, they can just make something and then they'll do it all. They always do make something completely unrelated and then just be like, yeah, that's where it is on the timeline.
I will say, if this movie comes out and they're like, yep, it's the Hylian Civil War, I'll be like, fuck yeah, like that. Yep. That, you know what? Yeah, sure. Let's do it. Let's if they do come out and they're like, no, of course it fits in the timeline.
I am not holding my breath.
I'm on board, but I don't think they will. But yeah, I think that as long as you are true to the source material, Matt, I feel like I heard you one time refer to it as like not being ashamed that you're inspired by a video game.
Yeah.
As long as you're that, then I think we're good.
Yeah, because that's why the second Sonic movie, like, no, is it a great movie? Frankly, no, but it's clearly not ashamed of what it is. It's not trying to present Sonic in a way that's palatable. It says, here's the stuff you like for the reasons that you like them.
And that means that me, as someone who enjoys that IP, can look at that and recognize it and say, yes, I like this. And Mario did a good job with that too. Yes, you want to have an appeal to a wider audience, but like, your biggest audience is the people who already like Zelda.
I just think getting to that essence is more of an uphill battle with live action than with anything else.
I kind of get what you're saying.
I hate to just be bringing up the MCU exclusively, but comic books are stupid. Like, I don't think you can get dumber than comic books. And yet here is the MCU, the most popular thing for a decade.
Yeah, I would say that the MCU for a long time was very flat and not comic-y enough. It took a while for them to figure out their identity.
Well, it took until Bob Iger walked in and told Ike Perlmutter to get the fuck out of the room.
Right. Well, and it is, you know, it's worth noting that even with Marvel and its success, like, there certainly were Iron Man 3s along the way. But yeah, your basic idea, and I will, like, I think maybe to Alex's point, so when I picture Captain America, as someone who grew up reading Captain America comic books, even though the art style fluctuated a bit between different comics, I had a pretty good idea of what Captain America looked like. And when Captain America showed up in live action, it was a good approximation of what was in my brain. Whereas with Zelda specifically, you have everything from, you know, Breath of the Wild to Twilight Princess to Wind Waker. And all of those,
it's all a very of those are linked. Open-ended kind of thing.
Right. So and I think it is a harder, like, to, as Alex was saying, I think, like, it's going to be difficult. And I think this would be true in animation too, honestly, but I think it's difficult to land on a look that everyone, no matter what Zelda game is their Zelda game, goes, that's Link. And that's kind of where I think you maybe look at Breath of the Wild and go, okay, maybe that's kind of our template. Because that's the one that's big right now.
Mm-hmm. I think if you told me that Guillermo del Toro was working on it, I'd be on board.
Yeah, well, I mean, so, you can tell me Guillermo del Toro is doing pretty much whatever you want and I'll be on board.
Well, so like here's
Doug Jones as Azora.
Here's the question. Like, are we
he's already done it?
Are we talking what do we predict is going to happen? Or are we talking, is it possible to make this good? Because if we're trying to predict what's going to happen, I think I'm not even saying that I think it's going to be good. I don't have faith in it. But if we're talking about the idea of whether it's possible on, like, I feel like it's so difficult to say that it's not possible for them to do it well, because it, like, every concern just really boils down to it's hard. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's hard. Movies are hard, but I think it can be done. I really do believe that.
I guess my feeling is more it's going to be so hard to do it well in live. Like, I don't think that the Mario movie is perfect, but it gets close enough, and I think animation made it so that they could get close enough, where I feel like working in live action, they're going to be they're not going to have the advantage of working within a medium that's going to lend itself well in the way that Mario did. And I'm just imagining, like, what the final product is going to be. And I just have very little confidence in it.
I'm not personally willing to say that I think Mario was an out-and-out success at doing it, because they did it at the cost of making something that was interesting in any way.
So, oh no, I just think that they got close enough because that they were working within a medium that's like, you're gonna be able to represent Mario well, whereas if you were doing a live action Mario, like, it's like, that's gonna be very difficult.
Well, and I think Mario has the advantage of, like, once again, like a comic book, I think you know what Mario looks like, no matter, like, whether you play 64 or you play Odyssey, Mario looks like Mario. Whereas that's not true of anything in Zelda. So, yeah, like, doing it in live action is absolutely a hurdle. I honestly, and maybe this is just because, like, there's some part of me that, as a deep lore nerd for this series, fully believes that this can, you can totally make a Lord of the Rings level thing for Zelda. I do think that if I were going to make it, I would probably make it live action.
That's bold.
I don't think it will. Like, I think this is going to be a bad movie. Like, if I'm being blunt, like, I don't think it's going to work. Yeah. But I think this is what I want? Question mark.
Yeah, I don't think that's where they went wrong. Yeah.
Right. Well, and there's plenty more places to go wrong along. Like, there's a lot of ball game left.
Yeah,
Link will have to speak. Like, if you want to do mute Link, you can do that in animation in a way
Chris
that works.
Pratt Mario, we can survive Link talking.
It's gonna be Chris Pratt again, isn't it?
Like,
just Chris Pratt.
Tom Holland? No, if it's Avi Arad, then it's probably gonna be Tom Holland.
Honestly, yes. I mean, he was in Uncharted too.
Yeah.
Ah, oh, fuck. That's very right. But I don't like that's the thing. If you're not going to make Link talk, you don't make the movie. You just don't.
Oh, right.
So,
right.
like, like, is it worth getting hung up on differences like that? Or is it worth accepting that this is going to change and we should focus on finding the reasons that we like this stuff and look for those, cherish those instead?
Right. I would much rather enjoy this.
Yeah.
And I think I will, even if it's bad. Because, I mean, I like bad movies.
But... abundantly curious about what they're going to do.
Right. No, I'll go to this at midnight. I'll buy whatever the biggest special edition there is when it comes
absolutely.
Out physically. Like, I'm on board, no matter how
invested.
Terrible it is.
Yeah, I'm also on team, I'll like this if it's bad, because like I'm simultaneously sitting here being like, I think the Mario movie was kind of bad. That is how I feel about it. But also I loved it. So
I left the Mario movie with just my inner child just doing cartwheels. Like,
yeah, and I don't think those are contradictory feelings within me either. So it's like, to that extent, I'm sure I'm gonna love this. I just think it's also gonna be bad.
Yeah, I agree with the sentiment that this is a harder uphill battle than Mario was.
It comes down to, can they find the essence of Zelda and translate it properly within live action?
Can Avi Arad? Probably not, but
can the director of Maze Runner? Absolutely.
I will know when I see the Goron.
What is OG Zelda if not a giant maze?
Well, yeah, so that's the thing, Alex. We're not gonna actually get an answer to all this, because like this isn't gonna be a real test as to whether Zelda can work in live action, because over there in Amazing Spider-Man 2, Electro was a glowing blue man.
Well, he also had dubstep.
Morbius is right there, and they're making that fucking Kraven movie that looks awful. So, this movie's not going to be a relevant data point in the question of can Zelda work in live action.
I will say the thing that seems consistent with the Avi Arad's work is that it feels like very like 2000s action schlock, like Jerry Bruckheimer-ish. And if it feels like that, then I'll enjoy it.
Oh, I was going to say like that, like early 2000s actions and sci-fi and fantasy is just, and it's probably because I was 10, is 100% my sweet spot. And if this is an early 2000s fantasy film, I am, that's the dream.
If that's the case, go full, like hard into Twilight Princess. Just commit.
I need Ganondorf played by Kevin Sorbo. That's, you know, really, really hammer in that late 90s, early 2000s vibe. Yes, I know he's problematic. Don't get in the way of my dream casting. And yes, we are going to paint him green and we can accuse him of green face. We did it to Matt Mercer. Why not Sorbo?
Every part of this just looks like it's the wrong people doing it. Like,
I mean, and
even Miyamoto, like, I'm not sure if he should be doing it.
But once again, that's how I felt about Mario the entire time, until they were like Jack Black. And I was like, okay, that's fine. But everything else about this seems like a problem. And then I watched it and I was like,
yay. I still feel that way about Mario.
But I watched it and I was happy. So
yeah,
I
clapped when I recognized it. Like,
right.
That's what I got.
Maybe
out of
that's
that
all I need. Maybe that's all I want at the end of the day is to just see Zelda things happen on a screen, and then at the end of the movie it plays the theme song and I go, yay, my childhood. I think that's all I want
this to clear the bar set by Secret Invasion, and I'm not confident that it will.
Yeah, I honestly, I just need this to do well enough that they'll realize that. Because there's been a lot of rumors around a Star Fox movie, too. And I want that to happen.
They should absolutely do that.
Because that would make sense.
Here,
that would be so much easier.
Part of the thing here is that when you say the words Mario movie and no other words, mm-hmm. there's not really any expectation for something good out of that, because Mario's not like there's just isn't a Mario.
Yeah, that's
story.
The other there, thing.
There's a legitimate negative expectation.
Yeah,
when you say Mario movie, honestly.
Yeah, because there's no story there. There just isn't. Right.
And we have a data point existing before this Mario movie. We have a data point for Mario movie equals bad.
Yeah, and that's just not the case for Zelda.
Yeah.
So you can't go the same strategy with Zelda as you do for Mario. Because then you're losing that essence of why people like it.
Yeah.
So I'm just not. I like the fact that the Mario movie exists as it is almost makes me feel worse about this. And I certainly don't have confidence in Nintendo for a movie. They have given me absolutely nothing to feel good about as far as understanding the essence of their game's stories. Tears of the Kingdom shows that very recently.
They have at some point between Skyward Sword and Breath of the Wild, they really lost the ability to have a good narrative in a Zelda game. I don't know what transpired. Then again, Age of Calamity happened.
Yeah, Age of Calamity was pretty good.
Secretly
honestly.
the best game in the Breath of the Wild trilogy.
I don't disagree.
It's at least for the plot.
The best like story.
That but I actually think it.
Well, I mean, as far as like plot and character development goes, it that's not a joke. It is the best one. All of the reason that I like the characters in Breath of the Wild is because Age of Calamity made them good characters.
It's a very highly linear game with a lot of cutscenes, so it could do that.
I mean, I played Witcher 3. You can make a giant open world game with a lot of cutscenes. They just decided not to for Breath of the Wild. I suppose, is that an episode? I mean, very easy listener mail request for this one. What do you think about the Zelda movie? Are you optimistic? Are you terrified?
Will it be the second movie to make $1 billion?
I mean, how much is that? Because like maybe if more billion is exactly how much Morbius made, then yes, it will outperform Morbius. Like, I mean,
they'll do two Morbiuses.
Oh, two more billion.
Two more yeah. billion. The first movie to
maybe
two
a more
trillion.
I don't want to get too excited. Yeah, let us know your thoughts. Connectivity at NintendoWorldReport.com.
I found an article. Exactly how much is a more buck?
That feels like another like hour on the end of this podcast.
I'm just gonna scroll down to the bottom of this. One more buck is worth $70 million.
That feels like it should be. Yeah, okay. I feel like that goes the wrong way. Yeah. Listener mail. Do the thing. That's all I've got. I guess you can write us about other things too, but mostly the Zelda movie, because that's. I assume when Neil comes back, we'll also want to talk to Neil about this. So. Also, pray for Neil in the desert being tempted by Satan.
I think he's on his at least like his second trial right now. So
yeah, this is the one where he's standing on top of the temple. Oh, Bible humor! All right, with that, that's an episode. it's super. It doesn't alienate a good chunk of the audience at all. Bye, everybody.
Bye.